Are you getting up to pee at night a whole bunch? It's called nocturnal urination. And we have a urologist, Dr. Peter Ince, who's going to help us sort this out.
Welcome to Talking with Docs. I'm Dr. Brad Weening.
I'm Dr. Paul Zalzal.
Dr. Peter Ince.
You put the U in urology.
Well, thank you.
We're happy to have you here.
Glad to be back.
Drop a like, subscribe. We can't afford to pay our guests. So the second best currency is your like and subscribe. It's a distant second.
And can I say something?
Yeah.
And you can cut this later, but I actually work with these two guys in the same hospital, and in real life, they're actually good guys.
Yay! Forget about what you see on the screen, really good guys.
Okay, right. So Pete, peeing at night, common problem. Like, how common are we talking?
A lot of men, I would say probably at least 50% of men, once they reach 50, these symptoms just start happening, and it's very common. And the first thing I want to say that's really important, it is not a sign of cancer.
Okay.
Prostate cancer.
Good to know. All right. Peeing at night is nothing bad, just inconvenient, really.
Exactly. And it can get worse with time. Some men get it, some men don't. And we're going to talk about how to treat it.
Okay, so what's the definition of, like, how many times do you get up to pee at night before you say this is nocturnal urination? Is there a cutoff?
Well, once is nocturnal.
Okay.
But so, the real question is, with all of these symptoms about peeing, is how much does it bother you? Right. So most people, I would say, are bothered because they think it's a sign of something bad. They think, oh my God, I'm getting up to pee, it's slowing down, I must have prostate cancer.
Right. Okay.
And that is not the case. And the reason for that, if you look at the prostate, and it's hard to demonstrate here, but the bladder flows through the prostate and out. Mm-hmm. Prostate cancer grows on the outer or peripheral part of the prostate, and it grows outwards. It doesn't block the central tube. Benign growth, or BPH, is what grows in the center. And that's why you get the symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Right, that transitional area that they talk about, because the tissue is actually different,
right? Transitional zone, right.
Impressed?
Okay.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right, well done, Brad. So it's not a sign of something very serious, good to know. So it's really an inconvenience.
Exactly. And as time goes on, that blockage and those symptoms, getting up at night, feeling like you're not emptying completely, your flow slows down, you know, you have to double void, triple void, and then you get the frequency, urgency. All of those things are because of that prostate.
Okay, and that benign process.
Benign prostate.
Right, and we're talking about BPA, so benign prostatic hyperplasia or hypertrophy.
Hypertrophy, just growth.
Growth, right, so that's what we're talking about. This is very, very common. So let's say the average person, they do it once a night. They're like, you know, it doesn't really bug me. I don't mind getting up. I get to watch a video of Talking with Docs. I take a pee in the middle of the night. I go back to bed. Life's good. You're like, fine, let's not do anything. But say they come to you now, like, my life is very, very disrupted. Where do you start on your algorithm of treatment when you talk to someone who's struggling with peeing at night?
Well, first you want to modify those lifestyle changes that can make a big difference. You know, don't drink for 2 to 3 hours before going to bed. Drink as much as you want during the daytime. I'm talking about water.
Yeah, I knew you were going to look at salsa.
And, try to limit it for 2 to 3 hours before bedtime. Do not drink a lot of water. Try to eliminate it. And then if you take medication at night, you know, don't take a big glass of water with it. Try to just take sips. Okay. And don't drink during the night.
Okay.
So that is a huge thing.
So basically limiting the amount of fluid intake you have before you go to bed. That
makes
seems
sense.
Obvious.
And now also think about the total amount of water you drink. So I've had people who are telling me all of these problems, how they're peeing all day, they have to run to the bathroom, they're getting up at night, and it turns out they're drinking 4 or 5 liters of water a day. Why? Because everyone knows water is good for you, so they think, well, a lot of water must be
a
lot of good.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. So don't drink more water than you need, and limit when you drink it. That makes a huge difference.
And we actually had Sanjay Pandey on, and he said, yes, drink to your thirst, or maybe just a hint beyond your thirst, and that's a healthy amount of water.
And another good guide is just look in the toilet. If it looks really dark and concentrated, you probably need a bit more. If it's looking clear, and it's looking more like light yellow, that's probably a good indicator.
What kind of advice do you give for, like, bladder irritants and diuretics like caffeine and alcohol?
Well, that will make you pee more frequently, and that's something that certainly can be limited, or try to change to decaf. Those things can be helpful as well.
Okay.
I noticed too, yeah, like on the rare occasions when I have a few beers in the evening, by rare occasion I mean Friday or Saturday, I find I have to pee a lot at night. Is it specifically alcohol? Is there something about beer that does it? Is it just...
It's a diuretic.
So it's just the diuresis effect.
Yeah, opens up the taps, and then it just makes you pee more day or night, depending when you start drinking.
Evening. Okay, so we're cutting back the amount of fluids that we're taking in, especially before bed. We're cognizant of the fact that alcohol is going to make us pee more. Anything else? Any other suggestions?
Do you tell them to do a good void before they go to bed, obviously, and maybe do that kind of double void or whatever? Yeah, try to maximally empty your bladder.
Yeah, and most people are doing all of those things. Other things, a little more technical, if you're taking medication, say for blood pressure, a lot of it is a diuretic.
Right.
So try to take that in the morning instead of in the evening. Consult your physician.
Okay, so medications can do it as well. And then that's pretty much...
Okay, so we've got bladder hygiene. We're maximizing that. Still peeing three times a night. Very frustrated. They came back to your office like, thanks for nothing. You know, I tried that. Didn't work. What do you got now, Doc?
The next thing is we can try the natural herbal supplements. And I often, you know, most people are very keen on that. Nobody wants to take medication if they don't need to. So herbal supplements do work. Now, they work best for people who have mild to moderate symptoms.
Okay.
And that means, you know, you're getting up once or twice at night. The flow's starting to slow down. It's not terrible, but it is starting to be noticeable. So there are multiple different supplements which are helpful. So I won't go through all of them, but
your favorites.
Can I say a brand name?
Sure.
Yeah.
So Beta Super Prostate combines...
Sounds good.
Combines herbal things which actually are very helpful, and a lot of patients get good relief from it. Now, at least try it for 6 to 8 weeks minimum before you decide it doesn't work, because it takes a while to build up.
Okay.
Is the main one you're talking about, is it saw palmetto? Because this, we hear a lot about this, or you would see evidence that, oh, this is worth trying for BPH or nocturnal urination.
Yeah, so saw palmetto, and there are different plant sterols. I'm not an expert on the different herbal concoctions, but they definitely do help.
And that's what's in...
And a combination of those are the most helpful.
Right, and that's what's in saw palmetto. So apparently there's a plant called a plant sterol that helps reduce 5-alpha reductase activity.
Yeah.
But the quality and the concentrations are so variable across supplements, it's been hard to get a good study to show that, hey, this is going to kind of work for everybody.
Exactly. And the other thing is, because it's a natural supplement and you find it in nature, you know, you can't go out and get... an exclusive rights to it and can't copyright it, so why put money into it? There's not a lot of drug studies that somebody's going to pay for.
No one's going to fund the research for that, you're saying.
Interesting tidbit. Did you know that it's grown natively in the southeastern United States, like North Carolina, kind of that area there? And it's called saw palmetto because the leaf looks like a saw.
Wow. There you go.
He's been staying up late.
He has.
It's kind of commute learning.
Yeah.
Okay. So the natural supplements definitely do help.
Okay.
And I do recommend those first line for people with mild to moderate symptoms. Do
Love
try
that.
Them.
Love that.
Okay. So you've gone through the lifestyle. You've harvested some natural supplements, and you're still having issues.
So then we can get into medication. And the medications are very effective. So the first one are the muscle relaxants. So the prostate itself, even though it's a gland, about a third of it's made out of smooth muscular tissue, which can tighten up.
Okay.
So the bladder, when it squeezes to empty, it flows through the prostate, and as you get older, those muscles start to tighten up, and you get the symptoms. So the alpha blockers relax the smooth muscles of the prostate, increase the flow, and are very helpful. The side effects of that those medications, because it's relaxing the prostate, when you have sex or ejaculate, the prostate will not be able to squeeze as tightly, so less fluid or ejaculate will come out. And for some people, that's not desirable.
Because
you can get retrograde ejaculation, since it goes into the bladder, right?
Yeah, it's not dangerous. It's not that it's causing a problem. It's just, you know, psychological.
And then the other one is it can make you lightheaded or dizzy, right? Because it's
and because it relaxes the smooth muscles, it can relax the smooth muscles in your arteries, and it basically can decrease your blood pressure. People do get dizzy. Some people actually, if you stand up quickly, they may pass out. So that has to be carefully watched as well.
What would be the generic and name brand of a drug like that?
So the typical drugs, Tamsulosin,
yep,
is very common. And there's Silodosin. The older ones like Hytrin and Terazosin, which are not commonly used now.
Okay.
So Tamsulosin?
Tamsulosin.
Stops from peeing when I'm dozing. Is that what it's called?
Okay. Exactly.
All right.
Okay, so that addresses the involuntary contraction of that smooth muscle that's causing it to be too tight. So that's the first class. And then there's a second class that's commonly used.
And so the second thing, not only does the prostate tighten, but as you get older, it starts growing.
Okay.
Not because of cancer. It's called benign growth. So as the prostate enlarges, it also grows into that urethral tube going through it, and it starts pinching it off.
Okay.
So medication, the 5-alpha reductase, can shrink the prostate, open it up, and also improve the symptoms. So those medications do take 3, 6, 12 months to shrink the prostate enough so that it opens and gives symptomatic relief.
That's a commitment.
And many times we use a combination of the two drugs because they work by different mechanisms, and they're most effective when used together.
And the thought behind that class is that testosterone gets converted to dihydrotestosterone, like the stronger form of testosterone.
The active
That's
form,
the enzyme that kind of converts it. So you're stopping that step.
Yeah, and so because of that blockage of the conversion, one of the most common side effects is that it can decrease libido or sex drive.
Okay.
So now that tends to happen mainly in older gentlemen, but it can happen at all ages. Some people say, you know, I've been on this drug for 6 months and I've got no interest in anything right. sexual, and then stopping the medication will reverse it.
Okay, but you stopped, but then didn't give enough time to actually do its job, because you said about it 12 months before you're going to see any benefit from it.
6 to 12 months, yeah.
Bit of a catch-22 then, for some.
For some.
Okay, so now you've tried the bladder hygiene, you tried the supplement, you tried both those medications, you're still peeing at night, you're like, I can't do this. Dr. Ince, you must have something that you can do to definitively solve this problem.
So one other thing we can add in. So the prostate is tight,
yep.
Mm-hmm. It's grown, mm-hmm. It's blocking the flow. Mm-hmm. What happens then, your bladder says, hey, we got to work harder. So your bladder is a smooth muscle, mm-hmm. and it starts squeezing harder, and it gets thicker, just like if you're working out, it gets okay. thicker. Mm-hmm. And as it gets thicker and working harder, it becomes less compliant, mm-hmm. so you have to pee more often. And you're also going to be going more urgently, so it becomes overactive a bit.
Okay.
So the third thing that I'll try after those first two medications is something to help relax the muscles of the bladder a bit. And that often can give good relief so that the frequency, urgency part of it is improved. Now, if your flow is already really slow and you add that in, there's a small risk of going into retention, meaning you cannot pee, and then you have to run to the hospital, put in a catheter. But
so what are you doing to do that?
If you add a medication to relax the bladder muscles.
And what would that be?
Well, there's several different ones that do it. Mirabegron is the latest one, which has the least side effects. The other classes of drugs usually cause a dry mouth.
Yeah.
And, it's constipation. Because it is relaxing smooth muscles in your salivary glands and your bowels.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. It's getting into a complicated algorithm. Yeah.
So now you're on three pills. Problem.
Yeah, so we can try usually three different types of pills to help with this. And they're very effective.
Okay.
All right, and does it ever get to the point where, like, we got to do some other kind of intervention now at this point? Does it ever get to that point? Where
oh, yeah.
Okay, so we've tried the lifestyle modification, we've tried the herbal supplements, we've tried 1, 2, 3 different medications, and we're still having an issue. Is this where you're saying, okay, time to do something a little more invasive?
Yeah, so if those medications aren't working, we have to think about opening things up.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, there's a dozen different ways of opening up the prostate. So if you're online, you're gonna get those 12 different answers. It can be very confusing.
Can be.
And I'll be honest with everybody, as urologists, we're biased. We all have our favorite procedure, and as a consumer or as a patient, you have to do a bit of research and come up with what you think will be the best.
Right.
What's your favorite?
Well, here in Canada, we have a more socialist healthcare system.
You do?
So only certain things are covered.
Okay.
So the classic transurethral resection, or TURP, is what we most commonly do. Now, having said that, it's also the gold standard, and it is very effective and time proven. Now, the other procedures we have to pay for here in Canada, and those can, you know, be thousands of dollars. Now, those include things that will heat up the prostate, steam the prostate, vaporize the prostate, microwave the prostate, all kinds of different things.
Sounds awful. All those sound awful, Pete.
Well, sounds like a bunch of ways to make popcorn.
Sounds like Star Trek.
But the important thing is to do your research and, you know, try to figure out what works best or what you think will work best. It's a tough to do because there's so many studies on it.
Yep.
And even as urologists, we have people who will, you go to one urologist, they'll tell you one thing, and it's varied.
Okay, maybe we'll make a video one day just about all these
all
different
the types
things.
Of TURPs. That's a
great
idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, okay, so you've had a TURP now. Can we talk about success rates? Is this a successful operation?
Very successful.
Okay.
So once we open up that channel, people usually find that there's almost immediate relief of the blockage symptoms. And by that, I mean the flow improves. You know, they're feeling like they're emptying their bladder. What doesn't improve as quickly are the things that caused your bladder to get irritable.
Mm, makes sense.
So you're still getting up at night, you're still going frequently, you get the urges because you still have your same old bladder.
Right.
So that will gradually, once your bladder says, hey, I don't have to work as hard, I'm going to start easing off, and over time your bladder will relax, and you can also take those medications to relax your bladder, and the symptoms take time to improve.
Two questions that I guarantee we're going to get. So after you've opened this up, you gotta drive a transport truck out of this pipe now. Am I going to be incontinent? That's my first thing. And the second thing is, am I going to be impotent? Because I'm sure you answer these all the time in your office.
So there is a sphincter below the prostate, which we leave intact. And, of course, there's a chance that can get damaged, but it's very rare. So incontinence is very uncommon, although it is a risk.
Okay.
Erectile dysfunction also can happen. Anything that damages the nerves that go to the penis. So the nerves going to the penis run right beside the prostate on either side.
Okay.
And so if you use something that's generating a lot of heat or electricity, those nerves potentially can get damaged. It's fairly uncommon because of different techniques. For instance, we use what's called bipolar cautery, which does not conduct through the body, just through the loop, or you know, use water jet, steam jet. All those things have a lower risk.
Just this discussion's probably giving a lot of people erectile dysfunction.
It is scary when you think about it and you don't know much about it, but it's a very common procedure. Usually erectile dysfunction incontinence are rare, so have a discussion with your urologist.
Right.
All right.
One side note I think it's important to mention, we actually have an entire separate video with a urogynecologist that talks about the specific issues in females. So this was mostly a male-generated video. I would say, short of the medications and the prostate-specific stuff, some of the general principles would have some overlap, like with respect to the bladder and the urethra, but obviously just not the prostate stuff.
Exactly. So all the symptoms we said about the related to the bladder with the frequency, the urgency, we would use the same medications to relax the muscles of the bladder. Right. Females have a short urethra with no prostate, so it's very rare there's blockage. Although women can get urethral strictures, and that causes the flow to get slow. They have to push, and a gentle dilation can make those things much better. And the other thing that can cause blockage in a female is prolapse. So other things are coming down and pushing up on the urethra.
Sure. We had Dr. Best on. She kind of went into great detail about all that stuff.
So what did you say?
We had Dr. Best, Carolyn.
Oh,
Best.
I thought you should. She was the best.
No, come on, Pete. You guys do different jobs. We can't even compare the two of you. Okay, now that's an awesome summary. If you're struggling with this, we know this is a common problem. Now you feel armed to go have a discussion with your family doctor or even your urologist. If you like this video, please like it, subscribe to our channel.
And do not be embarrassed about this. It's extremely common. That's why we're making a video about it. If we can talk about it, you can talk about it to your doctor. Remember, you are in charge of your own health.
We'll see you next
time. Thank you so much for sharing that expertise.
You're very welcome. Take care.